and welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Kate Murray, joined in the studio by Stuart Robson and Craig Burley, and we will start the show with some friendly action between Arsenal and Chelsea. Arsenal continuing their perfect pre-season with a 4-0 win over the Blues, goals from Gabriel Jesus, Martin Odegaard, Bukayo Saka and Sambi Lokonga. But as for Chelsea, it's another bad result for them. After the game, Thomas Tuchel asked if he can guarantee Chelsea will be ready for the start of the new Premier League season. Here's what he said.
I cannot guarantee. I saw today a team like from Arsenal who's, like I said, also mentally committed, I have the feeling, to an idea how to play, committed to a level of exhaustion, of being exhausted, a level of physical commitment that I saw that we could not match, and also a level of mental commitment which we lack, because we have a lot of players who think about leaving and looking for their options, and we have players who left, and this is, I think, at the moment obvious.
Let's welcome in Don Hutchison to talk more about what we just heard from Thomas Tuchel. I'd say it was not so subtle with what he said there afterwards, pointing out some of those players.
Listen, I have a problem with this guy at the moment in charge of Chelsea. I mean, managers all look to make excuses. That's 10 years ago, 20, 30. There's always a way to try and get out. But I'm sorry, I know there's a couple of... There's not 10 players trying to leave. Timo Werner's name has been mentioned recently, Azpilicueta. I know he's lost some players. They've brought some in. They might bring some more in. But I got a problem with that attitude. When asked if they'll be ready for the start of this season, it's his job and his coaching staff and his sports scientists and all the people behind the scenes to have these players ready. It's his job to have them prepared and up for it. So... I'm sorry, but the old saying goes, and I know it's pre-season, the buck stops with the manager. So I get it, if there's one or two with an attitude problem, he has to sort that out. But don't tell Chelsea fans that they might not be ready for the start of the season. Tell me whose job it is to get them ready. What, is it the kit man or the tea lady? It's his job. It's his job to get them ready. So he needs to start doing his job, otherwise he'll be under pressure.
Do you agree with that, Don?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Craig's hit the nail on the head. I mean, it's one of the worst comments I think I've ever heard a manager in all my time in football, especially the 30 years the Premier League's been formed. I've never, ever heard a manager, Kay, turn around 2 weeks before the season starts and saying, I cannot guarantee Chelsea fans my team will be ready for match day one. It's unheard of. What that does, it gives the players then an excuse, unless there's an ulterior motive where... You know, the owners and Todd Boehly get wind of what he's saying and he's trying to get transfers double quick through the door. But still, that doesn't sit well with me. You know, if you're two weeks ago and you lose 4-0, results can happen in pre-season. I'll never really look at a result until you get really, really close, as I said, to match day one. Then you start playing a good side and your best side. Thomas Tuchel come out, came, he said, well, it wasn't our strongest 11. I looked at the teams before I come on here tonight. Pretty strong side, by the way, and pretty decent subs that came off the bench. Koulibaly came on for about 20 minutes of the game. But to say you're not ready, or you might not be ready for the Premier League's opening game, it's an outrageous thing to say.
His words were, we didn't physically commit to the game. And as Craig said, that's the sports scientist's job to make sure they're fit enough. We weren't mentally as fit as Arsenal. That's his job. He's saying that players that might want to leave didn't play at their very best and didn't show the right sort of commitment. Well, then you need to get rid of those players quickly or not play them, you know, and teach them a lesson. You might be at the club when you don't want to be, but you know, we're going to play players that do want to play. So he's got to make sure he sorts this side out and this club out fairly quickly. Otherwise, Chelsea could be in trouble and he could be in trouble as well.
Is it just a message to the players or is he trying to point to the board as well, to the management?
I just think he's trying to make an excuse for a poor result. I mean, he's trying to brush it out as if, oh, problems again. No technical staff at the club, no sporting director. It's Todd Boehly and the ownership and it's me and we're not ready. But you know, the Koulibaly's and the Raheem Sterling's of this world who are the ones that are in so far, there's nobody else.
They're the ones that signed.
There's nobody else yet of a real stature in the game. They have to be under his watch. I would presume they've not just been presented to him, here, deal with it, because there is no bridge between him and the ownership, as I mentioned. There's no, you know, Peter Cech's gone, Granit Xhaka's gone, Bruce Buck's gone. And please tell me that it's not Todd Boehly and his group that are picking the players, because I wouldn't imagine they know a great deal about it apart from the finance. So it has to be coming from him, the signings. And
he's pointing the finger at one or two players, yeah, particularly Azpilicueta, who wants to go to Barcelona, yep, and hasn't been allowed to go at the moment, or whatever, for whatever reason. He's the player, and a couple of the other players that might want to go, Timo Werner could be one of them, they're the players he's having to go at the moment. So it's never going to end well.
It seems, though, as well, Don, that last season's problems, yes, it's a pre-season game, the friendly games, and they're just getting warmed up for the season, but it seems as though they are having those same problems in finding the net as well, 4-0.
I know. And he mentioned, I think he mentioned something about Timo Werner as well, saying he should be glad and should be lucky and thank your lucky stars. I'm paraphrasing that he plays for Chelsea. So he's got so many problems. But I do see Chelsea being light at the top end of the pitch this season, Kate. Unless they're going to, with Koulibaly and other signs that's going to come through the door, unless they're going to grind out 1-0 wins and be tough to beat, which maybe that's their plan. But I just don't see them scoring bundles of goals. I don't see a 20-goal a season, man. Havertz is going to be leading the line, obviously, but that's a difficult role, playing a false nine. You know, Raheem Sterling's never really been prolific in terms of hitting 25s a season at a new club with new players trying to hit the ground running when he started pretty late as well. So you'd like to think that Thomas Tuchel's got a plan. And as Robbo said there, I mean, I was reading today that Adrian Rabiot at Juve has been banished to the under-23s. He's not part of their plans. That's what you do. And I thought Thomas Tuchel had that in his locker. I thought he was a disciplinarian. I thought if anyone was going to get these Chelsea players at it and have them ready for match day one, it would be him, not the flaky excuses with 2 weeks to go.
But there's the problem with discipline. There's the problem with discipline. Sometimes you can go over the top and then cheese the players off. And that may be what Thomas Tuchel has done as well. And now he's having to backtrack slightly.
Well, I think he did it. And I know it was a big failure, but I think he did it. My honest opinion, and I stick with it, and I said it last Christmas, I think he did it with Lukaku. Now, I'm not suggesting if he'd handled it differently, Lukaku would have been a goal-scoring phenomenon for the last 6 months of the season. But he threw more gas on the fire, which was already burning. And it made more headlines, it made a bigger problem for Lukaku, which he caused himself, and then it escalated. Let's go back to a more recent one. Timo Werner, Don mentioned it, we talked about it on the show Thursday, Friday, I think. Werner's comments were innocuous, really. They were pretty soft. I mean, he was asked a question, he didn't go, Chelsea stinks, I hate it here. He said, well, World Cup's coming up, I just want to be happy, I want to play, I need to play, I know I need to play better. That's obvious, blah, blah, blah. It was hardly back page headlines. Tuchel gets asked about it and throws more gas on the fire by saying, well, he's lucky to be at Chelsea. He should be thankful he's got a contract. To Robbo's point, you're sitting as a player going, oh, is that right? Oh, I'm just lucky to be here, am I? You know,
most managers would have said, I don't want players to be happy on the bench.
Yeah.
He's saying he's only happy when he's playing and he's scoring goals, but he needs to play more and he needs to score more goals. And I can understand why he's not happy. But again, he's throwing more fuel on the fire.
Bayern Munich losing to Manchester City in friendly action. Erling Haaland scoring in his first appearance in a Man City jersey. He was already so very, very happy to have his first win against Bayern. But that's not all he said after the game. Guardiola's a bit crazy and I like that. It's going to be fun. So Robbo, you got a really close look. Did we get a really good idea of what we're going to see from City with Haaland in there?
Yeah, I think they mixed up their play a little bit. There was a couple of times early on where Nathan Ake came out with the ball and Haaland just pulled across. They were playing with three at the back by Munich. He pulled in between the players and the ball was played over the top. You saw his pace to get there. There was once when somebody flicked on a goal kick and he got in behind Upamecano and didn't make the most of it. Upamecano got back at him. But they also played their normal football. They linked up the play. They played, through the midfield. They played it out wide. Haaland just gives them that something in behind as well. But he's a good player with his back to goal.
I like that comment as well from him afterwards, Craig. Said he's a bit crazy, but I like that. I mean, we're seeing the difference here from a player who's actually having a lot of respect for their manager as well already.
Well, I would take crazy as meaning...
Good crazy. Crazy good.
Intense. And driven, enthusiastic, intense. And demandingly crazy about standards. And I keep going back to it, but we saw it from Jack Grealish last year going in there, and I think it was a big eye-opener for him, the standards of the other players set on a daily basis, not just on a weekend. And I think for Erling Haaland going from Dortmund, which, let's be honest, are effectively a feeder club and a selling club these days, or have been for a while with a lot of the younger players, and going into a club that are just trying to buy and build and bring in the best in the world, and fight for the possession. So yeah, I mean, it's going to make him hopefully a better player, and that's a big problem, I think, for the rest.
What can you tell us about Bayern? How did they look in this game?
I thought they were poor. They played with three at the back. I said they came with Koeman on the right-hand side, Alphonso Davies on the left-hand side. Kimmich was way off the pace. De Bruyne completely outplayed him. But you're asking really about what happened in the front areas without Lewandowski. It started off with Gnabry up front, with Müller slightly to the right of him and Sané to the left. And Sané's a player that's a shadow of the player that was at Man City. He didn't play well last year in Bundesliga, so he needs to sort himself out fairly quickly. There was no real link-up play between them. And then he had three shots as opposed to Man City's 22. And the possession was around about level. So they just didn't create enough. They looked, I thought, a very poor side. And just looking on the side at Nagelsmann, he was getting frustrated, he was getting angry, he didn't quite know how to change things. It was a strange performance.
Well, clearly Thomas Müller hadn't recovered from that.
It was a great interview, that one, Val. It's like a proper chat down the pub.
How it's meant to be, is it not?
It was lovely.
But he was all smiley and chirpy in that interview with Robbo, but I wouldn't imagine...
I'm not with him, I can say he was actually really poor in the game.
Yeah, I mean, it is pre-season, but I think that's the one thing Man City do to a lot of teams, a lot of really good teams, and we would imagine when Bayern get up to speed, they will... I don't think they're as strong as they were a couple of years ago, but they'll still be and should be a good side. But Man City can make pretty good sides look average, and I think that was the case yesterday.
The trouble is for Bayern, being around Bayern for a couple of days, they expect their manager to win everything this season. He expects to win everything this season. I'm not sure that's going to happen for him. He could be a manager halfway through the season that's just under a little bit of pressure.
Thanks, guys. Well, you'll be happy to know that all three of these men will be back answering your tweets on Extra Time today. Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Pre-season Clásico Barcelona beating Real Madrid 1-0 in Las Vegas. The only goal of the game was a great one too from Rafinha. Don Hutchison, watch this game. And you have to say, it was a brilliant performance from Rafinha, wasn't it, Don?
To be honest, Kate, it was a brilliant performance all round from both sets of players. The atmosphere in the stadium was brilliant. The standard was good. The tempo was good. Rafinha, with his goal, was outrageous. I mean, the technique he showed when he got it on his left foot and whipped it into the top corner, he looked really sharp. Dembele, you're right, he came on for about half an hour. He looked sharp as well. But I thought the whole standard of play in general, normally when you get a game, a sort of pre-season game, you might think, well, it might be a little bit pedestrian, it might be a little bit slow. Lewandowski got 45 minutes in the bank, then at half time he sort of done shuttle runs, if you like. He'd done about 20 of them, so we sort of knew he wasn't going to come out for the second half. But I've got to say, all round, all the players that took part made it a very entertaining game.
Okay, so we're going to just go through the lineups because we saw some changes in this one. To start, you had Ansu Fati on the left, Lewandowski through the middle, and Rafinha on the right. And then at the start of the second half, Dembele came on, Rafinha moved to the left side until he was subbed out just past the hour mark. Does it matter? Are we starting to see who may start alongside Lewandowski this season? Or can we just look at this as a pre-season friendly?
You know, when we were asked, I think we were all asked, what was our best front three? I went with the one we saw in the first half. Fati down the left-hand side, Rafinha down the right-hand side, Lewandowski through the middle. And I think that's how he will start, unless Dembele, over the next couple of games, plays brilliantly.
And I suppose this is the chance for him to be showing that to his boss if we're seeing another electric performance from Dembele, and it's a boss that wanted to keep hold of him as well.
Well, I think when somebody comes in who's a very similar player to you, then it's a, even though you're signing a new contract, you're taking a wage cut. But if that's not a kick up the backside, and Dembele, you know, put himself out there this year on a free transfer and basically said, I'm available. Yep. And while there may have been one of some suitors, there was no suitors at the price and the salary he wanted. That must have been a bit of a blow to him. So he had to sort of go back and go, I'll take that wage cut. And so they've come to an agreement. But I think it's Lewandowski. I don't disagree with lineups, but I do think during the season where it will be Lewandowski and whoever's playing well.
Yeah.
And whoever's fit. Now, Ansu Fati has had a problematic time in the last 12 months with a nasty hamstring injury, which is always very worrying for a younger player. He seems to have come through that. And let's hope he can get a continuation and a run of games. And then when you see Rafinha coming off that right-hand side on the left foot and scoring a goal like that, managers just absolutely love.
And we haven't talked about Ferran Torres as well. You know, there's another player that can come into the side. I know you don't fancy him.
No, I don't fancy him. I just think with the arrival of Rafinha and with Dembele staying and with Ansu Fati fit again, and Ferran Torres, as we know, can play through the middle. He has done for Spain. But there's Aubameyang and there's Lewandowski. I just think this move back to Spain, albeit back to his homeland, is going to be as much of a problem in terms of game time as it was at Man City.
It doesn't help when you have your president in private functions, nonetheless, saying things that you'd been sold a dud practically as well. Remember, we were talking about that last week with Ferran Torres.
When you're all, I think he was actually either physically crying or doing something like that when he was missing chances last year.
I mean, didn't you cry when you missed a couple of chances? can you ever imagine him crying?
That doesn't bode well for pressure.
Have you ever cried?
Hi, when I knew you were on the show today, yeah, and a bloody good sob.
The tears of steel.
11 o'clock this morning.
And here we are. Anyway, what was interesting was Rudiger starting at left back, because many had thought that since Real Madrid signed him, Alaba would go back to left back. But after the game, Carlo Ancelotti made it very clear that Alaba and Militao are his first choice centre back pairing. He actually said, Alaba as a left back only when necessary. I do not want to change the pair from last year. Are you surprised at this, Robbo?
To a certain degree, but I've seen Ancelotti's sides play for quite a while, particularly at Napoli. He came up with this thing that it's a 3.5-man defence. So the right back, in the Napoli's case, it was the left back that would break forward, and the right back was more of a centre-half who tucked in. And that's what I think he's doing at Real Madrid. He'll let the right back get forward and almost be, you know, another attacking player, and they'll end up playing with a back three, with Rudiger playing as the left-sided centre-half, as he did for Chelsea on many occasions. Because he's happy going out into a left-back area when the left wing-back gets forward. So when they're in set play, it'll be a back four. In general play, the right-back will go forward, and I think he would just tuck across.
And I think he'll get forward if he has to, but he's not the most comfortable in possession. You know, he's not going to run down like a natural full-back and whip a ball in. But I think what they have here, in the back of last season in particular, is they have somebody down the left-hand side in Vinicius Junior who can be left alone. Mm. Listen, don't worry about going overlapping him all the time. Just give him a bit of space, stick the ball to him and let him go and do his magic. So that side is kind of taken care of as long as Vinicius Junior brings the form of last season to this season. Rudiger doesn't have to attack as much as if they were struggling on that left-hand side.
So if that's not too much of a concern, one thing that might be for Madridistas is Eden Hazard. After the loss, Thibaut Courtois said, we've won a league and Champions League with this team and we have faith, but if Karim is not there, then we are lacking a bit in front of goal or in the creation of danger. It is the first match. There's no reason to come to any conclusions. We'll get to the fact that you could see that Benzema was missing in this one, John, but Eden Hazard did not put in the best of performances, did he?
He didn't. I bet he's not happy with Courtois neither, because he's more or less saying, without Benzema, we ain't going to score any goals. And they don't look like scoring goals. It was evident when you're watching that game, Kay. I mean, no shots on target for the 90, and they never look like scoring. Eden Hazard, as we know, wants to come short. He wants the ball at his feet. He wants it on his own terms. He never wanted to spin in behind. He had the perfect chance playing against Garcia and Andreas Christensen to try and test him in behind, and he didn't. He kept coming short and short and short. And the lads will tell you, when you've got someone that wants to come short and is not blessed with great pace, you can actually go really tight and get him on the halfway line because he hasn't got the pace to get in behind. So then you can squeeze up and condense the play. So you're only playing in one half of the pitch. It makes a lot, makes your job as a midfield player in front of you an awful lot easier. So they just looked like if they had Benzema in the side tonight, Mariano came on for about 15, 20 minutes and they got a ball down the left-hand side. They whipped a fantastic ball in. He got a header. Just missed it off target. You're thinking, if that's Benzema, that's a goal. That's 1-1. And that's exactly what they're missing.
You could say they're lacking a bit in front of goal, like Courtois said, but they lack a lot more when they don't have Benzema on the pitch.
Benzema's the player that gets them up the pitch, you know, because quite a lot of last season they played on the counter-attack, particularly in the Champions League, where they allowed the opposition plenty of ball. But when they won it back, Benzema didn't go and make runs in behind. He came short and found little pockets of space. And then he linked up with the left-sided player, and he linked up with the right-sided player, whether it be Rodrigo, Vinny Jr. down the left-hand side. And that's how they got up the pitch. Without Benzema, I'm not sure how they get up the pitch. That's a big problem for them.
And he walked back and he nicked the ball off midfielders. And then they won it back and then he spun in behind. Some of the games I was watching him, he was pulling himself out to the wide areas when they were in possession and centre-halves were like, they were overloading. He's just a very clever player. But to go back to Eden Hazard, I know Robbo and I were talking about this, I think it was Friday, and I think we're on the same page. He's had 3 years off, basically. He's basically had 3 years off. And all of a sudden, I know Ancelotti talked about it in a very positive term, but I think that's him just playing this man-manager, try and find a reason to be positive. You can't just say, I'm coming back 10 pounds lighter, this is it, I'm back fit, after having 3 years pretty much in the wilderness.
He's lost his confidence. There's no doubt about it. He's lost his confidence, so he doesn't want to go past people at the moment because he's frightened of losing the ball. Even when we saw the clips, when he had the interview, we saw clips of him training. There was a couple of times he tried to go past his man in the training session and the defender just sort of got a... So he had to go back and pass it back to the fullback. So it's his lack of that pace over 5 yards, which he had in abundance when he was playing at Chelsea. He's lost that and he's lost his confidence.
He's not. Let's be honest. He's not cared too much about how he's played. No, I don't care what they tell you or what he tells you. He's not. You don't come back when you've made such a big move in that fitness state if you've got real desire. You don't, right? Ronaldo didn't. Messi didn't. Lewandowski didn't. The top players. Karim Benzema, there's others. You just don't. The ship has sailed with Eden Hazard. Now, we have La Liga on this network, and we may watch this season, and he may have moments. There might be moments he does something a bit like the old days, but he won't do it consistently. I don't think he'll do it consistently ever again at the standard he was doing it, for the reasons that I've mentioned. And that's a shame, because we all watched him at Chelsea almost carry this team for 4 or 5 years, or whatever it was, as Robbo said, going past people, being kicked and picking them. He was probably one of the most kicked people, but he'd pick himself up, he was bruised, he'd get on with it, there would be end product. But in my own opinion, he got this big move, and he was happy, with the move. But when you go to Real Madrid, you want to be happy with the move, but go on and have that desire to be an even better player. He's never done that.
Yeah, well, we've been talking often about whether Frankie de Jong will be staying in La Liga next season. He might be changing positions if he does. He played at centre-back alongside Piqué, and after the game, Xavi said, I'm not here to send messages. I already spoke with Frankie. I value him very much. He's a key player, but then there's the economic situation and financial fair play. He can give us a lot, also as a centre-back. This is interesting, Craig. He has played in this position at Ajax, but is this Xavi sending a message to him also that you're not going to get to do what you want to do if you stick around here? Or is he seeing where he can use him if he
There's
is sticking
so
around?
Only so many messages one man can take.
He says he's not sending a message, by the way.
a message from the journalists, a message from the media, a message from Laporte, a message from... I think in the big games, no. I mean, he's a clever player, and he can play out from the back. And he said that, and his quotes, he said, look, I prefer to be getting the ball, not as a centre-half, but as a deeper midfielder, starting moves off and then going and joining in. Well, that's Sergio Busquets. But he can go back there and pass it. But stepping up and stepping back and playing offside.
The only thing I would say, Xavi was part of the Barcelona side that had Mascherano as a centre-half.
This has been mentioned.
There was also at Bayern Munich when Kimmich played as a centre-half under Guardiola. I know, and Xavi must have had chats with Guardiola and thinking and have similar ideas. Frankie de Jong could probably play as a centre if Barcelona were totally dominant. So everything was in front of him. He could come out with the ball. He could be the playmaker. And as Craig said, in the very big games against the best teams, maybe in Europe, that's when he might have a problem.
But the one thing I would say, Robbo, is Mascherano was effectively a Tigers defensive midfielder who had a little nasty streak, or a big nasty streak, and could tackle and had that defensive mindset within his game. I think De Jong has the skill set to pass it.
I'll ask you the question, and particularly Don Hutchinson the question.
Oh.
Is he better than Eric Garcia as a centre-half?
That's Don.
Now you're talking, because he is. He is better than Eric Garcia. I don't see it in him, Robbo. I don't see it in Eric Garcia. I just don't see what he brings to the Barcelona side. He hasn't got a turn of pace, not particularly good in the air. You want to play against him because he's got a mistake in him. But at the same time, I think Xavi's clutching if he thinks he's going to play Frankie de Jong as a centre-back. If you're a manager and you're a team doing your analysis against Barcelona and you're getting your midfield runners and you're getting your centre-forwards and your wide men, you're going to target him for fun. Because when he was flying at Ajax, he wasn't a holding midfield player. He was quite high up the pitch. He had license to get forward. Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant player when he's got his eye and he's looking forward and he can play with a little bit of freedom, if you like. Going back to play centre-half, which I've done, by the way. I don't know if Craig's done that. I've done that as a holding midfield player or a number 10 when I was at Liverpool and Graham Souness.
And it finished your career, didn't it?
Well, no. Yeah, well, absolutely, because when you've got time on the ball, we can all play. I mean, listen, Luka Modric can play, but you wouldn't play him centre-back. So I could play, but as soon as you come up against... I come up against Franz Kahr at right-back once. Graham Souness thought I was a right-back. Played him against Franz Kahr. My word, I never played right-back ever again for Liverpool. Tore me to shreds. So there's going to be games where if they're playing against the bottom six side in La Liga and you play Frankie de Jong as a centre-back because you've got 90% possession, go and do it. But don't kid the world on that you're going to play him as your centre-back, especially in a two. That's not going to happen.
I did it for Scotland in a World Cup qualifier. You got to really think about what natural defenders think about is squeezing up and dropping off and offside and going with runners and letting people run. There's a lot to think about when you're playing it back there. Unless, as Robbo said, your team's completely dominant and then you can just make sure you're talking to people and putting them in position. They go back to Garcia and one or two others. I know there'll be the odd anomaly, but Guardiola's not stupid. Garcia back to Barcelona. Torres back to Barcelona. Leroy Sané was inconsistent, a bit of a problem. Back to Bayern Munich. That really hasn't changed. So, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Man City are laughing themselves to the bank with Barcelona, aren't they? At times they get these players in, one or two of these lads, they have a look at them, they play a few games, they want to go back to Spain, Barca will have them.
One player who's in Spain and they're looking to get in, it looks like they just might, and then they won't have to worry too much in this position in defence, is Jules Koundé. Everything for Koundé right now. The word is that Barcelona and Sevilla have reached an agreement for him and they've got the terms agreed with this one as well. It's a lot of money as well. An offer that Sevilla could not refuse, 50 million plus another 10 in variables, euros is what's being reported. Obviously Chelsea are in for this player as well.
Well, they've got a lot of money, Barcelona, haven't they? Somehow they've managed.
Now they have.
You know, they've sold a few more. They've got some teapots. They're having a tag sale outside this next week, Don, as well. But, you know, selling these TV rights and stuff. But I don't know.
But money aside, Koundé.
Money aside.
Money aside.
He's a good player.
Koundé,
he's a good player.
Aside.
And he's ideal if you want to play with a three centre backs at times. If you want a centre back that can go into a right back position, he does the sort of thing that Azpilicueta can do. And it was Azpilicueta wanted to go to Barcelona, so it looks as though that could scupper that. But I think Koundé's a good player. He's aggressive, although he's not particularly big. He's got good spring and he can come out with the ball. A good all-round defender and player.
Yeah, and he's a lot younger than Azpilicueta and he'll get up and down. And you know, the question is Chelsea, Barcelona, Premier League, great league to play in, living in London against a great club, obviously had their issues. But then you listen to the pathetic comments from Thomas Tuchel in the last 24 hours. Mm. And then you think to yourself, oh, that's you know what I mean, don't want to go there and work with that at the moment. He's saying we're not even ready for the start of the season. We haven't got a striker. They've just brought in Lewandowski. You know, there's still some big players there. So, you know, if Barcelona come up with the cash, I think Koundé would have every right to go to that club.
Don, we've been asking on the show, who needs him more, Chelsea or Barcelona?
Chelsea, I think. I think they're struggling for bodies. They're struggling for good quality centre-backs as well. And there's too many players that have left. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, Jules Koundé is an upgrade on Aspilicueta. If he goes to Barca, he's an upgrade on Andreas Christensen, Eric Garcia. He's better what they've got. But I just think if you're Chelsea and you're Thomas Tuchel now and you're speaking to Todd Bowley and you go, if it's a 50-50 fight between Barca and Chelsea, you're saying to Todd Bowley, get him to Chelsea. Pay what you need to pay him. Pay him the money, pay him the salary, pay the transfer fee. We need him. Otherwise, we could be struggling for top four. That's how desperate I think Chelsea fans are seeing it, especially off the back of that 4-0 loss against Arsenal.
I think from Azpilicueta's point of view, it depends what Thomas Tuchel does and who the hell knows at this point. But if he goes with a back four or a back three, it's, in my opinion, it's Reece James.
Yes, he prefers Reece James now.
No, I know he's played as a right-sided centre-back, and that could be the case with the problems that Don mentioned there with Koulibaly, Thiago Silva and one other. But maybe if he goes to a back four and he's thinking about a change of system with no real natural striker, then it's going to be Reece James. So Azpilicueta's playing time is going to be diminishing. Maybe that's why. And maybe he's seen that unfolding and thinks, I really need to get this move to Barca because my game time here is expiring.
You can keep up to date with the latest on Jules Koundé and many more players on our Transfer Talk segments of the website. Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Last night, Gareth Bale scored his first goal for LAFC in MLS. It came against Sporting KC, and after the match, he talks about it.
The transition's been just kind of a normal one, what I expected. It's going to take some time, but yeah, obviously it's the end of season in, well, I would be in pre-season now in Europe, so yeah, I'm getting my fitness back up quickly. The club's doing an amazing job to kind of progress me and not push me too quick. Everybody at the club has made me feel very welcome very quickly, and I feel very settled straight away. So, and I think any player will tell you is if they feel happy and settled, they'll start to play their best football. So, yeah, I hope that continues, and I'll keep working hard for the team like I always do.
Seems happy there. He's well, just out the season, right?
I'd imagine his relocation package in this order starts with a nice private golf club, and then a house, and then everything back from there. But yeah, as he said, you know, we talked at the end of the season. I mean, there was a lot of talk about the championship. I personally never felt he was going to go there because it's rough and tough, and I don't think he needs that sort of aggro and that physicality at this point in his career. I think this is perfect for him. He'll play now and again, he'll come off the bench, he'll start, as long as he's got the desire to keep putting in performances, particularly with the World Cup coming up for Wales. I think this is a perfect fit for him and for Major League Soccer.
Everyone's a winner, Stuart.
It is. My worrying comment on what the worrying comment you made there is, they're trying to ease me back gradually. I mean, you've had 3 years where you haven't played. You don't want to waste too much longer getting into playing long football.
You don't want him to exert himself
too much.
Early on.
He's got to play games, get himself fit for the World Cup.
Yeah, good to see, though, isn't it, Don?
It is. I took from that interview, Kay, that he was quite relaxed. And when he said there, the club are not going to push me, I think that's probably the conversation that he had before he signed, because as Craig said there, we sat in this show probably a month ago and went, there's no way he can go to Cardiff. He can't go in the Championship. We've all played in the Championship. It's a brutal league. His body at his age would not stand the test of time. It's too rough. It's too tough. And he'd break down. So that conversation he would have had with the hierarchy or the manager stroke coach is, listen, you're going to have to ease myself in. I'm not going to be fit every single day from a Monday to a Friday, but I guarantee I'll be there for the weekend and I'll play my minutes and I'll play my part, whether that's starting or come off the bench. So as he said, he looks happy, he's fit, he's scoring. Great move.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
But that is all we've got time for on the latest edition of the show. But stick around, because the guys will be answering your tweets on Extra Time. Don Hutchison will be with us as well to tell us more about his travels. Stay with us. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Kay Murray, Stuart Robson, Craig Burley, and we've got Don Hutchison with us as well. In fact, a couple of the guys have been on their travels this week. Mm. We've got Robbo up in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Yep, covering a game up there, Green Bay. Yep. Don's been to Legoland.
Yeah. he nearly got himself banned.
Nearly got himself into a fight in Legoland.
Did.
There he is.
Yes.
Where's the Lego?
Oh, God, Don, more kids.
Who's the biggest Muppet?
More kids. I tell you what it was. It was a basketball competition, and you had, what was it now? It was fiver for three balls. It was a tenner for five balls, and 20 quid for 15 balls. So I've gone 20 quid, and you've got to get three baskets, but they were like proper tight. I mean, like, you looked at the hoop, and you looked at your ball, and you were like, yeah, like they've tightened this up. Like, you've got to be spot on. But my technique, Kate, honestly. I was like Kobe, bro. I was like my technique was like beautiful. So I got the three in. The worst part was it was boiling, and I had to carry those three massive dogs around the whole way round of Legoland for all of the day. I was a hero, but my God, I was sweating afterwards.
Well, just think what it'll be like when you're back there with your grandkids.
Well, there you go.
How much of a struggle would that be?
Well, one or two people there thought they were his grandkids.
Exactly. So tell me.
Yeah, but the kids loved it. The kids thought I was a hero, though. Everyone else, all the dads were all walking around the park with one dog. I had three.
Well, I think you're a hero having kids at your age.
Yeah.
What you stayed at Legoland, didn't you?
Yeah, stayed there two nights, yeah.
So, what's it? Obviously. What are the hotels made out of? Cheap Lego rooms? No?
No, they look like Lego. Honestly, it's a good little trip. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it with the kids.
Where is Legoland again in England?
Windsor.
I thought it was Windsor.
Windsor.
Outside London.
Meanwhile, Robbo, we really liked your jacket tonight, but apparently a kid saw it and ruined you.
Yeah, I went to a wedding, but it was my stepdaughter's actually, and I was given a speech on the occasion, but a young kid, probably about 7 or 8, asked if I added a cornetto.
I think
she was probably prompted by a mum and dad.
Yes.
I think, you know,
look,
ask that bloke whether he's got a cornetto. See what he says.
It sounds like it to me.
I gave her a clip round the ear and told her to get lost.
It's very nice. Yeah. It's a bright jacket.
It's nice. It's nice. Yeah. Everyone's colour coordinated. But at least he's dry, huh? Because you nearly got caught by the sprinkler.
Well, so how's Lambeau Field?
Lambeau Field was magnificent. 80,000 people inside it. It's a very historical ground. Do you know about it?
I don't know about it.
It's the Green Bay Packers ground.
Oh, I know about the Green Bay Packers ground.
And it's just a great historic ground.
Right.
And it's the first time
listen, don't stop there. Give us a bit of history.
Well, it's all about Vince Lombardi.
Give us some culture.
That's what it's all about, Vince Lombardi. It's the Vince Lombardi
trophy. The Vince Lombardi trophy, yeah.
Vince Lombardi bar, the Vince Lombardi restaurant. That's
bit
all
of
it
everything.
Is. Yeah, a bit of everything.
Right, apparently, Cornetto is not the name here.
An ice cream.
Ice cream.
Yeah.
Oh, they've not got the Just One Cornetto song?
Give it to me.
No.
All right, questions. Stuart.
We don't have any answers, but ask the questions.
Well, Stuart, who were you most upset with for Sprinklergate?
I wasn't upset at all, because I needed to be cooled down, because it was very humid and very hot, so I didn't mind. I was wearing a cheap jacket, so it didn't really matter.
You're as cool.
I mean, all Lutz was worried about was his hair. Look, he keeps pointing the hair behind his ears.
Yeah, like, well, he needs a band.
Tell me something.
Have you been on this show since you've been over? Look
at John run out of the way of it. That was a pathetic effort from John. I just stood in there. It was hitting me in the back. Don't worry about it. What's wrong?
What did you want John to do?
Stay in the rain. Tough it out.
Yeah, tough it out. Oh, look, the umbrella's coming
about
out
time.
Now.
No, you didn't wear a brolly.
No, I didn't. I didn't. We had the blokes behind us held the brolly up, and then we went on air, and they took the brolly.
Have you
away.
Been on the show with Stevie since you've been over?
Yeah.
And he, how was he after you aggressively accused him of a Liverpool bias? Well, it's not the argument.
One of the questions that came on the extra time was that did we get on? And I've always said Steve and I have never got on. We didn't like each other as when we played against each other. We don't like each other on the show, and it's never going to change.
But you know, he was muttering that night when you were in France and you shouted at him about your Liverpool bias. He wasn't happy.
Wasn't he?
No, not in a bad way.
He wasn't. Truth hurts, huh?
Yeah, truth hurts.
Don, what percentage is for Manchester United finishing in the top four this season?
Wow. I mean, they ain't getting above Tottenham.
Right, so that's...
Yeah, go on then.
I'm just trying to think. I mean...
Chelsea?
No. Wait for us. No, what's the percentage, Don? Come on.
I'm trying to get as close to zero as possible. Because you ain't going to topple Man City. You ain't going to topple Liverpool. I don't think they'll topple Tottenham and Chelsea. So I'm going to have to go zero.
Wait for this. Where was West Ham in it? You see, every year you say West Ham are going to be in the top four. What about this year?
And last year I was nearly right, wasn't I?
Well, they ended up seventh.
If they had prioritised, if they had got to January window while they were top fourth, they were fourth, Robbo, in January, and they didn't go out
and
strengthen.
It doesn't matter where they finished at Christmas. It's what they finished at the end of the season.
Because they didn't strengthen in January.
They never
prioritised the European Cup final, you know, the Europa Cup final, instead of going out and getting a top striker in, that would have guaranteed them fourth. Now they've been correct.
Are you accusing another of our pundits for bias here?
Biased, absolutely. But every year, West Ham biased.
So that's a 0%. So he's biased against Man United as well.
Zero.
Don.
Definitely.
What are you guys saying? It's got to be close to zero, no?
The question was for you, Don.
Yeah.
Okay.
We've got being asked, Don. Answer your own questions.
For everyone, zero. How many pre-season matches did you need to play before you judged yourself fit enough to start the season? Could you be ready for the season even if you didn't play one single pre-season match?
Not a chance.
Not a chance.
No.
And in my day, which was a bit older than these two, you used to play your best team in pre-season every match. So we'd play 5-6 games and you thought, I might be ready for that first game of the season. And then it'd be 90 degrees heat on the opening day of the season, which nobody liked. I never got to my best until about four or five games into the season when the weather started to calm down a bit.
So about four or five in pre-season, you're talking about 10 overall to be feeling.
But then we used to have 6 weeks off. You used to keep yourself fit, but you had 6 weeks without playing football.
That's quite high maintenance, isn't it? It needs Robbo 10 games to get going.
Yeah. To be at my very best, Don.
9 out of 10.
To be at my very best. I still got an 8 out of 10 in the other games. It was just 9 out of 10 after 10 matches.
Isn't it, Don? What did you need, Don?
Do you know what, Kay? I remember Peter Reid when I signed for Sunderland and he put on this ridiculous run. It was like one of these runs that were just... It was this one day where he just beasted everyone. It was a horrible run and everyone was flat at their backs. And he was brilliant, really. Like, he come over and he went, you remind me of me, son. He went, you just love playing football, didn't you? And I was knackered and I went up to him, like, still breathing. And I said, I tell you what, Gaffer. I said, I'll do you a deal. I went, whenever these running days are on, I went, sack them off for me. But I will play every single 90 minutes of pre-season games. It doesn't matter if it's a League Two side or where we're going. I just love to play football. I got more out of playing football than just running, just getting beasted, just getting hammered. I'd never had the motivation for it. But to answer the question, I'd probably say two games, two 90 minutes.
Two games?
I remember a sea change at Chelsea, and there was a big sea change at Chelsea anyway, from a playing staff, but from a training perspective, I can almost remember it. It was like one year we were run, and then the next year, I think it was Hoddle or Hullet, and we didn't do any of that long running, and everything we did was with the ball. Every fitness exercise we did, we had a 19% of the time we had a ball involved, because a lot of the philosophy was you're fit, that's how your fitness comes anyway, with the ball.
Yeah, of course.
So there was less slogging, old-fashioned running down beaches and running round parks, and more fitness work on the training ground with the ball. But I'm the same. I remember playing 6 pre-season games, and the first Premier League game started, and I was like, because the pace is different.
Because nothing can actually...
The pressure was different as well.
Nothing can recreate what's actually happening.
And it's the same as a player coming back from an injury, particularly a longer term, 2 to 3 months or longer, and he goes into the reserves and he plays 3 or 4 games or whatever it is, and he feels great. And then he goes in the first team and it's an eye-opener, because the whole pace, as well as the pressure, but the whole pace of how the elite, the top level football is played, you just can't replicate that.
Okay.
So it takes a good few games, it's not that easy.
Unless you're Don. For Don, what has Everton got to do to finally have success?
The owners beat Minnesota.
The owners have invested money and backed all the managers since Martinez, and yet they're worse off now.
Well, I mean, they've not really backed Frank Lampard so far. I mean, Tarkovsky's come in. They've lost Richarlison. They've had a bit of a sticky pre-season. As Craig said, they got battered out in America. I think they won, I think it was against Blackpool, I think, 4-2 today. I think Dele Alli scored a couple. But I sent out a tweet, I think it was last night. Is there any danger of Everton making some signings? Because, you know, if they've lost Richarlison now and they were in the bottom three for the majority of last season, God knows where they're going to be, because they're not going to improve. You're not going to sell Richarlison, bring in a centre-back and then climb, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 places up the league. So major, major reinforcements. Otherwise, this is going to be a horrible season to watch. I'm dreading it, really, because they need signings, need quality signings.
Yeah, but before they lost Richarlison last year, when they scraped up by the skin of their teeth, and it was more to do with how bad others were rather than what Everton did. They've got Tarkowski now from Burnley, but they, correct me if I'm wrong, he signed Donny van de Beek and he signed Dele Alli. I'm presuming it was him.
Yeah. Yeah. True, but I mean, they need more, Craig. If you sign them two players, I mean, Donny van de Beek was on loan.
Yeah.
He got injured. Dele Alli just couldn't get going, and this is a huge season for him. But you still need more quality, Craig.
Oh, no, I understand that. But even when he brought a couple of players in last year, they were no better off, were they?
No. And he must have known when he took the job that this was the case, that he wasn't going to get, you know, the squad wasn't quite good enough, and he wasn't going to get loads and loads of money to spend at Everton this pre-season. So he's got to do the best he can with them.
What do you think about what your mate Frank said after the game, Don?
What did he say, Kay, again? Remind me.
He wasn't very happy, was he?
He said, I've just called Don Hutchinson, but he's at Legoland and he hasn't got back to me.
But I'll wait for his tweet to see what he thinks.
No, I think it was one of them. I think he was honest in what he was saying.
I'll tell you what,
he's saying,
you offer them to Frank.
Lampard is saying, give me these four and we'll stay up.
Yeah, he's offering those. You're on loan, and the three, whatever they were, what are the Bears, Teddies,
Dogs.
That's the back four sorted at Everton.
Exactly. There you go.
He's already said he can't
dogs
play as a bit in a back four. On the right back, Franz Carr went past him. Yeah, no, forget that.
Franz got the head down and started running.
Yeah.
All right, Craig.
Don should have two-footed him.
Well, he did that quite often.
I know he did.
Yeah.
Okay, Mike, to not. Right, okay, Craig, who's more likely to finish top seven this season? Leicester, West Ham, Aston Villa or Newcastle?
Do you know, I was slightly concerned about Leicester. They had a poor season by their standards last year. It all depends on their recruitment this year. They had a lot of defensive problems. I'm trying to think about all the things that happened. Soyuncu, James Justin was injured, who's a good young player. Lots of problems at the back. Talking about selling Tielemans, potentially that could happen. That's not going to go down well. Who were the other teams? Villa,
West Ham, Villa and Newcastle.
Got to be West Ham.
No.
Especially if they get to come out.
I think Newcastle could spring a little surprise, if it is a surprise. They've got a new keeper in Pope. They've got almost got an all new back four, pretty much. All the old guard are out. Even the captain Lascelles last year was out. They got the lad that came in from
is it Gomares? I can't remember his name exactly, the playmaker.
Yeah, yeah.
If they get themselves, and I don't think, have they bought another striker? I know they bought Chris Wood.
No, not yet.
If they get themselves somebody that can poke the ball in the back of the net on a regular basis, with their money?
I'm going to go with Don, West Ham. They're talking about Scamacca going there, who's scored 16 goals last year. He's 6'5", he can also run, he's a decent player.
That's what they said about Sebastian Haller.
They did, yes. But I think Scamacca would work slightly harder than Haller did at West Ham. West Ham, yeah, with Moyes there, they've got a settled side. They're going to add to it. They're going to get
I don't see Villa doing it, do you?
No, not at all.
All right, so you're sticking with Newcastle?
Top seven? Yeah, yeah, I could see them.
Two West Ham, one Newcastle.
There you go, you're outvoted. Craig, what profile of manager do you prefer? The hard-nosed totalitarian drill sergeant or the more inspirational motivator?
Just an honest one, I don't care.
You don't care?
No, I just one that you can respect. I mean, how do you say that word?
Totalitarian.
I think it really works with players sometimes. I think there's a bit of come and go. Just, I always just liked a manager that you knew where you stood. And there was very little politics. And if you weren't playing well, you knew you weren't playing well and blah, blah. And I had quite a few of them, like Jim Smith and a lot of others. And I always preferred that.
Yeah, obviously Bobby Gould for you.
Yeah, I mean, there were, yes.
Loves Bobby.
All I wanted to do is play under managers that, as Craig said, were honest. That were good tactically and gave you information rather than just shouting and screaming, because that never worked with me. And Bobby Gould was a clown, so I just couldn't work under him.
What about you, Don?
I was quite easy going, Kay. I was one of them where me and Craig both
easy
played
going,
with Craig Brown.
Easy going?
Yeah.
Don Hutchinson.
No, honestly, I was one of them where it was all about, not all about me, but it was like the pride.
I think you were right first time. It's all about you.
No. I had pride in my work. I wanted to play well, and it didn't matter if I had Graeme Souness, who was honest and brilliant, or Peter Reid, honest and brilliant, or whether it was Glenn Roeder, who was really, really nice, calm, chilled. Me and Craig played under Craig Brown, another one. I think it's all on you. I think the modern day fan get caught up in this. Oh, which type of manager would you like? It's on you as a player. You adapt to the manager. If it's Graeme Souness, well, you know, don't be soft. You know, get on with your job. Be hardworking. Do the things that he wants you to. If it's Glenn Roeder, if it's Craig Brown, you got a different voice, different message. Deal with it.
I remember Wim Jansen, late Wim Jansen, who died earlier this year or a few months ago, when I went to Celtic. And Jansen obviously played in the great Dutch teams with Cruyff and blah, blah, blah. And he was a very quiet guy. And so at one point I was scoring a lot of goals from the middle of the park, box to box. I was flying every game. And then I had a little lull. And he didn't say much. And I still trained away and blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, a couple of games went by and I was not playing as well. And maybe I just wasn't, I don't know, couldn't put my finger on it. And he'd come up to me before one of the games, and it was like 10 minutes to kick off, 20 minutes or whatever, and he just went like that as he was going around the boys, as he did, having a little word, and he went, too many runs into the box, and he walked off just before the game, and I went, so when I got on the pitch, I'm now thinking harder about, nah, nah, run out of the box, yeah, make another run. I was thinking about timing, and it all came about because he said to me, and obviously he'd seen the last two or three games where...
So you were wasting a load of energy making runs where you never got the ball. Is that what you were saying?
Correct. And I had this little lull, and he said to me... And then I had a longer lull, which I didn't really, but it just made me think. And that's a different way of doing things. Another manager might have come up to you in midweek and said, you've been garbage, you're not playing well. Well, that's fine, but give me a little bit of feedback. Mm. And his feedback was very subtle, and it just made me think when I'm on the pitch, right, I don't need to be doing that every time because it's predictable. Let's be less predictable. And as a player, I just think that makes you think, rather than, you're just rubbish to this. You've been garbage the last 3 weeks.
As I've told you, the best bit of sort of motivation came when I'd been captain of Coventry, player of the year. Bobby Gould turned up and he said, you had too much influence on that team and too much influence on the club. I'm going to stop that. That was his opening line to me. doesn't really inspire you, does it?
No. It doesn't.
Well, he wondered why I didn't like him.
And I know Bobby because I played with his boy in that, and I've always got on well with Bob. But that's telling me that he's potentially.
He didn't like Stuart.
No. Well, he's not alone there, is he?
Yeah,
like,
no. I mean,
no, but he's afraid of a senior player.
Yeah.
Wary of a senior player, and I think, and we've all met a few of those, and they stick out like a sore thumb when they come in and they're all with the younger lads and blah blah blah. And it's like, I don't want anybody who's going to question my authority, almost.
And I did challenge him. I challenged him on a regular basis.
Well, that's not a
surprise. Just you get on with Bobby Gold. I get on with Bobby Gold. We all get on so well. It's great.
Bobby's a funny guy, isn't he?
Yeah,
it's him.
For everyone, if you had the chance to play in any league at any era, which would you choose and why? Don?
Serie A in the 90s.
Why?
Without a doubt. I loved Italian football. Mm. Loved it. Milan sides, the Inter sides, the Juves, Del Piero. You go all the way back to Baggio's and the great AC Milan sides. I'd have loved to have played in that era.
Serie A in the 80s, yeah. when I was playing, when, you know, and I saw Liam Brady go from Arsenal and go and play for Juventus, so I watched him play, and there was massive crowds, and the tempo was very slow, but it was technical. It just looked to be a great league to play, and it was the best in the world at the time.
Serie A when Maradona in the 80s, when he went to Napoli.
Oh, wow.
I mean, that was before my time, but I 90s were great, weren't it? You know, but when Maradona went there, when Napoli, let's be honest, they didn't have the money, did they? they may have took a little loan from
may
other people.
May have got
people.
Some help. Yeah.
And it was just, it exploded, didn't it?
And he
just got kicked from pillar to post every week, didn't he?
Yeah.
Because you could get away with that then.
Yep.
The challenges. Mind you, the challenges in Spain back in the day. My God. Mm. In La Liga.
Goycochea. Yeah. The butcher of Bilbao.
Goycochea.
Oh, I remember.
Good God.
Go and watch the Maradona documentary if you haven't already.
Amazing. It's absolutely brilliant.
Do you lot have middle names?
Yes.
I just found out some Europeans do not have them.
William
Craig, William Burley.
Correct. Billy is the other word.
William.
Billy Burley.
It's on my passport.
See, my middle name is Ian. And if you, Stuart. Quite rightly, if you do my initials. That's
Sir.
Right. Yeah.
S-I-R.
That's why I'm such a snob, really.
Yeah, well, we've got a doctor on the panel. Gouldy would have seen that. Why is he a doctor? Get him out. A doctorate of vacations.
He's a doctorate of doing
of sleeping.
Nothing.
Of sleeping.
A doctorate of sleeping. Doctor of days off.
Don,
what's your middle name?
No. Have you got one?
No. Is that because it's been too hard to remember?
No, the old man kept it simple.
Did you give the kids middle names, Don?
Yes.
You did.
We've got a Dougie Ray Hutchison. Sounds like a saxophone player. And we've got a Fletch Jack Hutchison.
Aww.
And Miller Paul.
Should have called somebody, one of his kids, Harry, shouldn't he? Harry Hutchison.
Harry Hutchison. I went with my three. I went because I'm not a big fan of middle names. I just don't see the point. And so none of my grown-up kids have middle names. I just.
What about you?
What's your chance to get another name?
You said you got grown-up kids as if you had some younger ones.
Well, 19 is. Yeah. The youngest is 19. I mean, that's pretty. 19-year-olds are grown up, aren't they?
Yeah. But once they hit 18, all their middle names were taken away from them.
Come on then.
My middle name's Louise. My husband, European, doesn't have a middle name.
Why not?
But my kids have got middle names Massimo and Mattia.
Anyone know Mark Walters' middle name? Former Liverpool player.
And a very good play for England youth with me. He was magnificent when he was a young boy at Aston Villa.
Do you know his middle name?
No.
About Pelé or something.
Everton. Everton is.
After Everton is. Weeks, the cricketer.
Everton.
Xhaka's got a middle name, hasn't he?
What is it?
So were you named your kids?
You know, Shane. Do you know this? I presume you know this. Xhaka's name is not actually Xhaka.
Oh.
What is it, Doctor?
No.
Ooh.
I always get this wrong, but I think it's Neil.
It is.
Oh, it's on the email, isn't
Neil.
It?
It's Neil.
I don't know.
Neil.
Emails.
No, is
it?
It is. I think it's Neil.
Yes.
Neil Shacker.
I think so.
No, Neil Hislop.
Why is he calling himself Shacker?
I don't know. Neil Shacker.
He had it on his number plate. Maybe you spot a number plate with Shacker written. I'll tell you what, I'll call myself that.
He's obviously just thought his mum and dad, his parents have named him Neil, and he's thought, sod that. I don't look like a Neil. I'm going to call myself something else.
Mm. So when you named your kids those middle names, were you watching Spartacus at the time? Something like that?
Anyway.
Italian names always sound a little bit like that. The kids have got Italian names because they've got an Italian last name.
Well, I've just had a grandson, and my daughter has called him Octavius, which...
Well, that's a cool name.
Interesting.
I like
Hockey.
It.
Octavius?
That's pretty cool. Yeah. That's pretty
cool. He'd have got hammered and gated.
It's not. You got to go. The kid's got to go to school.
I know, that's what I thought. But Oki.
Octavius! How can you go to the front door when you try to get your kid in
it? That's Stuart's grandson.
Yeah, you're talking about my grandson now.
He won't know. Not yet.
Not yet, he won't.
Octavius. I mean, you even raised your eyebrows at that.
He's called Oki, apparently.
Okay.
Oki.
Oki.
Oh, well.
Jockey on the Oki.
Have you had any more kids since we've been on air? No.
Not yet.
He sent five more tweets, though.
Not yet. Yeah, he's going to have to ring Frank, isn't he, to find out what he said after that game.
I'll get some goss for you.
Yes, please do. And come on the show and tell us it.
He's got him. He sees his blocked. Lampard's like that. Blocked.
All right, thanks so much for sending in your tweets and some good questions there. We like the middle name one. We'll be back tomorrow to do it all over again.
Is Neil in?